welcome to CBS Mornings On The Go ahead on this Tuesday, July 14th. Take us with you because we want to go with you. World Cup star Valerian Balogun, the leading goal scorer for the U.S. men's team. They are out of the World Cup, but he had such an amazing run. He's coming in the studio today. We'll ask him all about that red card controversy. Plus, when it comes to summer fun, you may not need to go far. Kelly O'Grady shares money-saving tips, including how to enjoy yourself with a staycation. That means right at your own place or your own city. Plus, the hit film The Wolf of Wall Street seemed a little too wild to be true. Turns out, the truth was even crazier, and it's all revealed in a new See It Now documentary on Paramount+. We'll talk with a former partner in the firm at the center of the scandal. And actor Alan Ritchson often plays those tough guys, does it very well. His new film, no exception. He's here with a new revenge thriller. It's called Motor City. He's great in this. All that and more just ahead. We're going to begin this hour, though, with the investigation into another deadly shooting involving ICE agents. This time it has happened in Maine. Officials say an agent shot and killed a Colombian immigrant who was in his car on Monday. Now, this is the second fatal shooting involving an ICE agent in less than 1 week. Lilia Luciano is in Bedford, Maine, with the latest. Good morning to you, Lilia. What can you tell us?
Good morning, Gail. Well, I can tell you that the victim is Juan Sebastian Guerrero, an immigrant from Colombia, according to a source with knowledge of the investigation. We've also learned from social media and other accounts he's the father of a three-year-old girl. Here's what we know. The shooting happened just before 7:30 Monday morning. Videos show the victim's car, a white sedan, turning slowly in circles at an intersection. Then another vehicle appears to intercept the sedan. ICE officers then approach the car and pull Guerrero from the driver's seat. In a statement, Homeland Security said ICE was conducting targeted surveillance on the last known address of an illegal alien. They say, quote, an illegal alien departed the residence in a vehicle and later attempted to flee, and fearing for public safety, an officer discharged his weapon. During an interview on CNN, Senator Angus King said that Guerrero was not the intended target of that operation. Crowds protested shortly after the shooting, and this comes just days after a man was killed by ICE in Houston by agents during a traffic stop. There have been at least 8 killings by ICE officers since President Trump started his second term. Joling.
Lilia, thank you. Turning now to a growing problem, scammers using FaceTime to pose as banks to steal your money. For more, we're joined by national consumer correspondent Usher Qureshi. Usher, good morning. It's good to see you. Walk us through, how does this work?
Good morning, Joling. Well, consumer advocates say they're tracking a rise in cases where scammers are utilizing FaceTime. Apple's own support site lays out how these scams actually work. It often starts with a text message about suspicious activity on your bank account or credit card. Sometimes, victims call the number in the text. Other times, the scammer calls them directly. The scammer says they need additional verification. That's when they switch the call to FaceTime. Once you're on video, victims are talked into sharing their screen while logging into online banking. Now, the scammer watches in real time as victims expose their passwords, account numbers, even one-time security codes. So why FaceTime? Well, Apple says it's because people trust it. Apple says if you get a suspicious FaceTime call, say from what looks like a bank, Apple wants you to send a screenshot of that call directly to them. All you have to do is open FaceTime, tap the info button next to that call, take a screenshot and email it to reportfacetimefraud@apple.com.
So those are some great tips, Usher, but what else can consumers do to protect themselves from this and other similar types of scams?
Well, a few rules that everyone should really heed at this point is that, first, consumer protection experts say never share your screen with someone who called you out of the blue. And Apple itself says it will never ask you for your password, passcode, or two-factor authentication code, period. Second, watch for urgency. If someone pressures you to move money immediately or says your funds need to be protected right now, that's the red flag. Hang up. So third, don't ever call the number they call you from. Contact your bank or Apple directly by calling the number on the back of your credit card or your bank card, or contact Apple directly through their website.
Sure. Those are really important tips. Thank you so much.
Time for the stories that caught our eye. Doing the honors today, the lovely Kelly O'Grady on deck. Kelly, good morning.
Good morning to you, Gail. All right, we're going to begin with concerns over a growing outbreak of a severe gastrointestinal illness. It's caused by a parasite. Now, it's suspected that the source may be lettuce or salad greens. According to the CDC, at least 31 states have reported cases linked to the parasite, cyclosporiasis. Michigan has been particularly hard hit with more than 2,600 suspected cases. Experts say the best way to prevent getting sick is to wash all fruits and vegetables before cutting, cooking, or eating them. Sounds like I don't have to feel guilty to go only carbs. All right, now to studying.
That's what everybody's doing now.
Exactly.
Eat berries, can eat lettuce.
All right, I want to show you some stunning video of a daring water rescue in Italy. This was over the weekend. Take a look at this. So you're going to be able to see the car rapidly sinking as a group of people desperately try to rescue a man inside. As luck would have it, that group happened to be military academy service members who leapt into action. Authorities say they were able to pull the man to safety before handing him over to first responders. Very lucky there. Now to a story of a DoorDash driver who really went above and beyond. Okay, so this video is truly chaotic. Watch this. You can see the dasher get out of her car when another car slams into her. That driver then runs off. Turns out he's actually being chased by the police who arrive on the scene. The DoorDasher, though, get this, completes the delivery. That's commitment. In a statement, DoorDash told CBS News the dasher is safe and recovering and that law enforcement acted quickly to apprehend the suspect.
They might not have gotten their sandwich that day.
Oh, I would have sat down and just stressed eat right there on the cat.
She's like, nope, got a job to do. Yeah. Yeah.
Finally, next time you're taking a walk around the neighborhood, you might run into one of these. So this is a tax bot. These bots are actually doing a job. They're mapping the area with lasers and GPS to help identify accessibility issues and make recommendations for improvements. The bots can be found in cities across the country, including in Hoboken, New Jersey, where officials are encouraging residents who see one to take a selfie and post it on social media. I don't know. Maybe. They're cute.
I love that he's wearing like the safety vest.
Yeah, I
love
it. Just in case you can't see him. Yeah. Got a bunch of those running around LA. They're pretty cute.
I love it. Thanks, Kelly.
Now to a U.S. soccer player who became a World Cup sensation, and sensation is the word. Valerian Balogun was the first American men's player to score multiple goals in a World Cup match since 1930. You go, Mr. Balogun. He also made headlines after he received a red card, boo hiss, in a game versus Bosnia and Herzegovina, which met an automatic one-game suspension. We did not approve. But that suspension was put on hold, we all know this, after President Trump spoke to the head of FIFA asking him to review the controversial call. We're happy to say that Orion Balogun joins us live and in color in the studio. It's so great to meet you in person. We've been buzzing about you all morning.
Thank you, guys. I'm very happy to be here.
So you made your debut, your World Cup debut on the national stage. I'm wondering how you're processing it all now that it's over and all the controversy. We'll get to that in a second. I'm just wondering how you're processing all of this.
It's been nice to step out of the environment. You know, it was very tough. You know, high pressure.
Yes.
But, you know, it's good to be back home. And then I came, you know, I flew into New York 2 days ago.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm just enjoying kind of just being here again.
Okay, let's go to the red card suspension. Let's go.
No, so let's talk about that red card suspension. It received a lot of attention. A lot of fans thought it was not deserved. What was your, I mean, I saw your reaction.
Fans had eyes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Your reaction on the field was one of devastation. But what was going through your mind?
You know, I was in shock. You know, it wasn't even a tackle, you know.
So right.
I was totally in shock. I think you could see my reaction.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, I just had to accept the decision and, you know, just try and be there for my team. But, you know, as I said, I was definitely in shock.
And you knew that it wasn't justified. You felt it wasn't justified.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, when something's not intentional, you know, it should never be mm-hmm. a red card. So it was just an unfortunate situation. And I think, you know, it put a lot more pressure on us than we needed.
Mm-hmm. And once the president got involved and made the call and then it was reversed, were you thinking, yay, this is good? Or were you thinking, I don't know if this is such a good thing for the team or for myself at this particular time? Because then that turned into a whole nother layer of controversy.
My initial reaction was, you know, I was happy to be back in the team.
Yes.
But when I kind of started to reflect, I knew it was going to cause a lot of controversy. And I could almost see within my teammates a bit of nerves because it's something that's so unique. Mm-hmm. But the closer we got to the game, I tried to just focus as best as I could.
Yeah.
But it was difficult, you know, a lot of outside noise, and that's hard to avoid.
Yeah.
We saw the U.S. men's national team do relatively well this year in the World Cup. How do you think that reflects on American soccer? We're seeing the growth of the popularity of the sport nationwide. World Cup doing, you know, great business here in the U.S. How did that feel?
It was amazing to be a part of it. I really felt we was able to unite the country. That was an aspiration of mine and the team before we set out, and I definitely felt that. I think you could see how many fans and how many young kids really, you know, were captured by it. And as I said, that's a very special feeling to be a part of that.
Let's go back to the whole red card thing, because we were so relieved once you got back in. But I'm wondering what the team was saying behind closed doors, because you're thinking they had been practicing knowing that you wouldn't be on the team. And then the day before you're on, what are you guys saying to yourselves in the locker room at that time? Because it seemed disorienting for us on the outside watching it.
Yeah, my teammates are like my brothers, you know, yeah. So they gave me a lot of reassurance. It wasn't something I could do. You know, it wasn't something I can change. It was just the situation that was unfortunate, which gave me confidence. But as you said, it was confusing because the team's practicing without me, you know, being in the team. I'm almost just playing a supporting role to try and keep the morale high. And then I think it was a day or 2 days before kickoff, I get told I'm back in the team. And we found out on the team bus, everybody was like screaming and shouting. It was a pretty intense bus ride to the practice field. And then,
were you able to focus that day on game day? I know they say athletes always compartmentalize, but were you guys able to focus on the game?
Given the expectations, all of a sudden, when we realize that you're going to be playing, and you see the controversy, which is happening across the media, across football, what is the team locker room mentality like as you step out onto that field, knowing that now they're like, okay, Flo Balogun is playing again? What goes through all the teams? What are you guys thinking?
Yeah, it's more just being able to separate, you know, the emotion from the job at hand. We're all professionals, so it's not something I think was too difficult to be able to separate once we kind of got over the initial announcement that I'd be back in the team. And yeah, you know, I think you saw definitely it was a difficult game against Belgium, and that can kind of overshadow whether we was focused or not. But, you know, from me being inside the camp and inside the setup, I know we had full concentration going into the game.
Will we see you back in 4 years?
For sure.
Team USA?
For sure.
That's good news.
Love
to hear it.
With Team USA?
For sure.
We're cheering you on.
Always.
Yes, we are.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you, guys.
Lauren Balogun, thank you very much.
Ahead, a former business partner of the real-life Wolf of Wall Street is telling his story. He's here on set. In today's Money Watch, with the cost of gas and airfares up from last year, many Americans might think their dream summer vacation is out of reach. But before you give up on that booking, Money Watch correspondent and CBS Saturday Morning co-anchor Kelly O'Grady has some money-saving tips that might help you out. Kelly, welcome.
Yes, good to be here.
Good to see you again. Okay, so when can we expect those airfares to come down, to ease a little bit? Can
we? I hate to say it, but not anytime soon.
Oh, okay.
Right? So the reason why airfares jump so much was primarily due to jet fuel prices.
Yeah.
Your gas prices, your jet fuel prices, really tied to the oil markets. Mm-hmm. And we saw a little bit of a reprieve when tensions had settled down, but now that things are back up in the Middle East, yesterday we saw the single biggest percentage jump in the oil market since 2020. So that's really going to translate into your jet fuel. In addition, airfare prices, it's not just jet fuel, it's also demand. A lot of these airlines trimmed their routes to deal with the war in the Middle East. And so if you were like me and you were looking to go on vacation for Labor Day and you're waiting for those flights to come down, it's not anytime soon.
So what can you do? You know, how much more are we paying than overall this summer? How much more should I budget?
Yeah, so this summer, the average American household for vacation is looking at about $4,000, which is an eye-popping number. But on top of that, that's up 17% versus last year. So, you know, for families, this is like the one time that they save, they splurge, they make the memories.
Exactly.
Jinx. But a lot of people are just saying, hey, you know, there was a Deloitte study that said 50%. It's too expensive. I'm not going to do it.
So what are some of the best ways that we can try to save on airfare this summer? What are the tricks?
Okay, fear not. All right, set your price alerts. This is what I always do. Mm-hmm. Google Flights, Hopper, Skyscanner. That's been a really, really good way for me to find that you know, day where it just comes down a little bit and then you press buy. Exactly. That's a great one. Another one is be flexible. Don't fly on Sundays. You know, if you can maybe a couple of days on the beginning or a couple days on the end, look at all of your airports. I'm a LaGuardia girl, but I'm looking at JFK, Newark, sometimes even Providence.
Shout out to Burbank in LA.
Shout out to Burbank. That's a great one. And then also, you know, book early, look at your credit card rewards. Oftentimes you can take your points from one system and transfer it over to another one. I always look what's possible there.
Last question for you. For those of us who want to do the staycation, stay home this summer and really save, what are the best options?
Unplug. You really have to unplug here. Okay, set your out of office. Don't do your laundry. Don't do any of those you know, things at home. Also look at a hotel day pass or a spa day pass.
I love that.
And then you can rent your amenities. Swimply, Pier Space. There are options. You just have to get in the right mindset.
Kelly O'Grady speaking right to my heart. Thank you so much. Good to see you.
Good. Pick up the phone and start dialing. I want you to deal with your problems by becoming rich.
So that, of course, is Leonardo DiCaprio in Martin Scorsese's The Wolf of Wall Street. It's based on the real-life rise and fall of infamous stockbroker Jordan Belfort. Now, a new documentary from See It Now Studios reveals the true story of Belfort and his firm, the infamous Stratton Oakmont. It's even darker than the movie. The title is The Real Wolf of Wall Street, and it's streaming now on Paramount Plus. It features never-before-seen footage and firsthand accounts from people who worked at the firm, including partner Howie Gelfand, who joined the company when he was just 19 years old. Watch.
I think I saw the Wolf of Wall Street movie alone. I had received a call from Jordan Belfort asking me if I wanted to attend a premiere.
I felt like wearing a paper bag with the eyes cut out.
I sat in a movie theater and cried.
I was watching my life on screen. It was surreal.
The story The Wolf of Wall Street tells is a narrative that Jordan Belfort created.
Jordan Belfort is not the one entirely that the movie depicted.
He admits he stole hundreds of millions of dollars.
His business model was illegal activity, deception, and fraud.
Leonardo DiCaprio playing you glamorizes you.
I prefer him than Danny DeVito playing me.
Have you ever told your story publicly before?
No.
Why are you here today?
Kind of asking for forgiveness in a way.
A lot of the movie was inaccurate. This is the truth.
We had crazy, wild times. I was living the lifestyle of the rich and famous. The drugs were going around. It was chaos. It was wild.
We got married, I think I was 23. The highs were really high, the lows were really low.
What's missing from the movie is that there is a price to pay.
He destroyed people's lives.
People lost money. People got hurt. God punished me for it.
For a lot of people, the American dream in this story turned into the American nightmare.
And Howie Gelfand joins us now. Good morning, Howie. It's so good to see you.
Same here.
So we were talking backstage, and I told you that my first couple of jobs on Wall Street, I worked in one of these boiler room type operations, and we took a lot of our cues from Stratton Oakmont and Jordan Belfort, who wrote scripts for our brokers. But when you see a line like that in the documentary, the American dream in this story turns into an American nightmare. What made you want to share this story for a documentary?
First off, that's actually my line. That was like the working title for the book that I'm in the midst of was, I was chasing the American dream and it turned out to be an American nightmare. Mm-hmm. What made me want to be part of the documentary is because so much of the movie was fictitious. It was like watching The Wizard of Oz. I said, boy, did they miss it. If they only knew the real story, people would be blown away.
Well, blow us away, Howie. What is the real story? I know it's a long thing, but just in a couple of lines, what did we not understand?
For one, the office was left dormant for months. There was no FBI raid. How do you drop that ball? Huh. I mean, all the documents, all the proof, all the everything is sitting in there. That was one, and just as excessive as the drugs and the women and the, they missed the entire gambling piece.
Mm-hmm.
I used to gamble $100,000 a night.
But let's talk about the reality and the money. Like, how did you even get involved in this? Because what were you making before you started, and what did you end up making when you were there? Because the numbers are mind-blowing.
I was making $35,000 a year, and within a year, I was making over $100,000 a month. So it was a pretty significant increase, I'd say.
Did you know what you were doing was illegal?
No. When I first started, it looked like any other brokerage firm I had ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting, my nose facing a wall, making 300 dials by finger mm-hmm. every day. So I was a cold caller.
Mm-hmm.
Then I became a junior broker. Then I became a broker. Then all of a sudden they asked me to be a partner, and I was a baby. I was the baby of the bunch.
When you found out it was illegal, you didn't think, well, I need to get out of this? What?
When I first realized it was illegal, it was probably took a year.
Uh-huh. Hmm.
And I said, but this is what they all do.
Uh-huh.
Just at bigger names. Merrill Lynch, Bear Stearns. So I don't know how illegal it is. So stuck around. Stuck around to the point that I was now making $1.5 million a year. Everyone I helped or I tried to help, and everyone, you know, was like living off of me. Plus my lifestyle was insane. $20,000-$25,000 a month, just bare bones
wow.
bills.
I want to know, you know, so much of what we see in the movies becomes maybe fact in our minds, right? We've seen this happen with the Social Network as well and other movies. What do you want people to take away from this documentary and to remember, especially as we're in this moment of kind of economic uncertainty?
He who dies with the most toys does not win.
Because
I had all the toys. I was the most miserable millionaire. 325 pounds, drugs, booze. I couldn't figure enough ways to subconsciously kill myself because what I was doing was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to anesthetize myself every day to do what I was doing.
Are you friends with Jordan Belfort? Were you friends? What do you think of him today?
Never. I think he's the same exact person.
Which is?
Selling a different product. A master manipulator, a top shelf con artist.
Today, still.
Absolutely, and he's looked up to. I had a friend that tried to have dinner with him a couple of months ago in Miami. They couldn't have dinner because the paparazzi and the Gen Z autographs. Do you really know who this guy is?
Let me ask you about that. Because you point out the fact that this turned into an American nightmare and that you, as a young man, didn't know that this was illegal. But at some point, you started to realize that just ordinary Americans were losing, in some cases, their life savings. That what you were doing, what you and the others in that business for many years were doing, were trying to entice people to separate themselves from their life savings. Did that ever cross your mind?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And when the time came where I had all these lawsuits, they said you could give up your entire retirement account, which is safe. That's one of those few things that you could keep, or give it to everybody and let them split it up amongst themselves. They said, goodbye and good luck.
Wow.
I don't want any of that money. It's blood money.
Blood money. Howie Gelfand, thank you very much for sharing the story with us. That's
pleasure.
Really incredible. The Real Wolf of Wall Street is produced by See It Now Studios. It's streaming on Paramount Plus. You gotta see this film. Gail!
Hey, Vlad, I always say this. You meet the nicest people in our progressive green room today, no exception. Here with Alan Ritson, talking about his new movie. You've never, I guarantee you, seen anything like this because it's a classic action film, but what's the best part about it, Alan?
No dialogue.
Yes.
You don't gotta hear me talk.
We like to hear him talk, but wait till you see what he does. We'll be right back. Twins are in love with American Girl, Harry Styles.
Love
it's
Harry.
Time for the stories. I love that song. Time for the stories that we call Talk of the Table this morning. It's a table. We be talking. And Jolene, you're in pole position.
Look, I have a one that is quite controversial in schools across the country. The latest move to combat the use of artificial intelligence. The University of Chicago announced it is banning electronics in classrooms for the first year law students who are coming in. In a memo, the law school explained that students need to learn how to think critically and solve legal problems with sound professional judgment. One law law school professor said he wants his students to participate in discussions and listen instead of staring at a screen. And also maybe not asking AI all of your questions and taking those answers. I love this.
Me too.
Me too. Get rid of the device a little bit or the laptop. Think for yourself. Make a mistake. Learn. I think we all need this.
That's how you learn. Making mistakes. I like this too.
When I talked to a bunch of Gen Z students for a piece I did a couple weeks ago, they said to me, you know, do you probably remember going into homeroom and the teacher had to tell everybody to quiet down?
Yeah.
We were all talking. He says, now when we walk into school, everybody's on their phone. No one is talking.
No one is talking.
So, yeah, I think it's crazy.
Well, you got a good one too? I think so too. Let's all follow it.
Let's all follow that rule. All right. My talk on the table is, what's in a name? Turns out what you name your kid can have a real impact on them in later life. So there's a survey out of 2,000 Americans that found at first meet, 18% of people judge a person based solely on their first name.
Wow.
You want to know what the most judged name in America is?
What?
Karen and Chad. Of course, Karen has been associated with a bad manner, middle-aged woman.
Budinsky.
Exactly. Yes. While Chad is seen as a symbol of exaggerated male bravado. So I was interested in this story because my wife, Marion, and I put a lot of thought into naming our daughter, Celine, in the hopes of saving her grief later in life. We wanted a name that was, this was our rule, we wanted a name that was historically meaningful, that lyrically matched our name, like my name and our name.
Yeah.
And something that our parents, because my parents' language is French, hers is Mandarin Chinese. We wanted them to have a name that they could pronounce. What we didn't want was anything trendy, right? We didn't want inanimate objects. Like, no offense to the Ambers and the Archers and the Coopers and the Stones out there. Cities, Dallas, you know, rivers.
No subverted names. That's funny.
I don't know.
No Austin for you. Look, this is your child's name. You're going to say it 100 times a day. Of course you're putting in that thought. But I feel for the Karens and Chads out there. They don't deserve the stereotype necessarily, right?
But it is what it is.
It is what it is.
I am fascinated by how much time people put in names, because I'm thinking when I was growing up, I said to my mom, Gail, where did that come from?
What'd they say?
Nobody had an answer.
Come on.
Nobody had an answer. So I'm very curious. You spend so much time and now naming your child has become a thing.
Okay, but William, I get Will because
yes,
of his dad.
Because of his dad.
But what about Kirby?
Falcon Crest.
Wait, what? Falcon Crest, the show?
Yes. There was a Kirby on,
Yeah.
And what goes with Bumpus? That was also kind of hard, but Falcon Crest,
Can I just, by the
way? We're very highbrow.
I want to shout out my mom for a second. She named me Jo Ling, and in Chinese, that means long life, and it has always sat with me. So I do think what you named your child, Kirby, William,
Celine. All right, Gail, Celine, we like it. We're very happy with our name choices. For my talk at the table, we're looking at how Mr. Worldwide became Mr. World Record Holder. Thank you very much. We're talking about Pitbull. He broke the Guinness World Record for the largest gathering of people wearing ball caps. More than 22,000 fans showed up.
What?
I know it's a thing. Showed up at the Star's London performance to achieve this feat and break the record.
Dang. Bowdies, we did it, Bowdies. We did it, Bowdies.
Bowdies, Bowdies.
We did it, Baldies. Now, most of the Baldies, we have to say, were wearing a cap. But scientists say this, guys, there's actually good news for the men who lose their hair. Researchers found that men who go bald by the age of 30 have a 29% reduced risk of developing prostate cancer. And those who go bald earlier have a 45% lower risk.
So I got that going for me.
Vlad, any thoughts? Because some men are very sensitive about losing their hair, and others just sort of...
Well, first of all, I shave my head by choice.
For the record.
I do have a bit of a landing strip in the back there, but I'm happy to know that I've got a long life ahead of me as a baldless man.
I thought it was interesting that they put your... I didn't know they were going to do that.
You did? Yes, you did.
No,
Gail.
I didn't. I had nothing to do with that. I think that's a Chris Stover move. Definitely not me, but, it worked. But
yeah,
it worked.
It did work.
Fans know and they love actor Alan Ritson for his starring roles in Reacher, you know it, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. His latest movie is like nothing you've ever seen. It's called Motor City. It's set in 1970s Detroit. So here's a premise. It's about a working class veteran seeking revenge on the gangster who stole his girlfriend and then framed him for a crime he did not commit. Big mistake. Here's what makes it so unusual. It has almost no dialogue.
Thank you.
And then we are off to the races. Richton also served as producer of the film. We're happy to say he joins us in the studio. Alan, congratulations. Yes. And thank you so much for
Bravo.
Coming.
Bravo.
Yes, my pleasure. Thank you.
I don't know what this says about me, but I watched it, and it was until 23 minutes and 22 seconds in that I realized, hey, no one has spoken.
No one said anything. Yeah.
But I still understood everything, exactly what was going on. It is so well done.
I'm so glad you felt
How that. Did you get involved and where did this concept come from?
So after Reacher season one came out and was sort of like this unexpected overnight success, yeah. I woke up on the Monday after it was released to like 40 offers in my inbox.
Wow.
And so I spent the week just reading every kind of, you know, mostly action stuff, but every script in town.
Yeah.
And this was the first one that I was just so blown away by. I finished the script and I was like, this is a masterpiece. Mm, I called my team. Yeah. I was like, this is a masterpiece. We have to make this.
What did you like? Why? Why were you blown away?
I think, the emotional journey, the human connection, the themes, the injustice that this guy suffers and what he does about it. There's something super cathartic. I think about movies like this because we all experience injustice. Look around. Like you could throw a rock and hit injustice somewhere. Some institution crushing some individual. Like, it's unfair. Life feels unfair a lot of the times. So what if we have the personification of karma? You know, like swift vengeance. Like, there's something I think we all wish for, you know, like a Reacher, or in this case, a Miller, who like does something about it. Mm-hmm. And so I think it resonated with me, and I think it will resonate with everybody that watches.
This feels like a big movie. It also feels like a piece of art, an independent film. 100%. What was it like getting this made? It's such a tough environment right now, and you did it.
It's a good question. It was incredibly difficult to get made. And I was not the first to try to produce this movie. Mm-hmm. Greg Silverman, who was the president of Warner Brothers 20 years ago, had an idea for a movie with no dialogue. So there was a shared experience universally, no barrier to entry. Everybody in the world could watch and enjoy the human emotion, you know, that everybody was conveying on screen. A brilliant idea. And so that was a mandate he gave Chad St. John, a brilliant writer, who decides like, oh, this is how we tell that story, which is genius. I mean, it's genius. Over the years, every leading man of the day, all the big directors took a stab, wanted it, and was attached at one point or another. But again, it is at the intersection of art and commerce. It's a super commercial film, action driven, it's gripping, but it's also this Shakespearean drama. Yeah. I mean, the love triangle is epic.
It is Shakespearean.
So it leaves studios going like, well, there's no dialogue. Who's going to watch that? Are people going to be able to connect to it?
Yes.
I'll
go first. So yes, they will.
Yeah, I think so. I believe in it too. And we were able to find some really bold financiers who helped us put it together, and we got it done.
So talk about your process as an actor, because as we've just said, you will absolutely understand what is happening in this film. But I'm curious more about your process when we know that actors usually have great lines of dialogue. There are those memorable lines, whether it's, you know, here's looking at you, kid, or frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. Yeah. Right. But how are you?
We don't get those zingers in this one.
How did you approach the script and your character?
The process is not that much different when there's no dialogue involved. There's two buckets that I have to work from, right? There's the dialogue side of things, where it's about memorizing the lines and making sure that we're saying the most authentic thing, right? Trying not to be on the nose, capturing the subtext and the words, masking. I mean, all the things that we do as human beings, like how do we convey with dialogue in an authentic way for the audience to understand what we're saying? I didn't really have to worry about that in this one, which freed me up to spend more time on the other bucket, which is the emotional, you know, human heartbeat of a scene. Mm-hmm. A scene is worthless unless it's moving us forward through this emotional river, right? And that's all we have to work with here. And so we would spend hours and hours and hours. Ben Foster, Shailene Woodley, incredible in this. Pablo Schreiber, everybody. Like, we would get in a room and talk through the emotional beats for three hours before we started shooting.
I can't wait for people to see it.
Me too.
I love hearing about the process. It's fascinating. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Congratulations. This movie is amazing. Got to go see it. It is out, Motor Cities, July 24th in theaters.
Where are you sending us?
Well, this is a fun one.
Streaming July 23rd on Paramount Plus, the hit series Star Trek Strange New Worlds returns.
You are facing the finest crew in Starfleet.
Boldly go one step closer.
Any of these missions could be on us.
To where it all began.
We've seen a lot of strange new worlds.
But we'll never see something like this.
Star Trek Strange New Worlds. New season streaming July 23rd exclusively on Paramount+.